Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science, and thank you, MOTAT. Marcus, give
thank,
us...
Thank you, MOTAT.
Give us the terrible news.
The terrible news. So we've talked a lot in the show about global warming, climate change, and the dire consequences of ignoring that. And this is definitely related to that. So there was a findings report came from the United Nations backed panel called the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. It's a catchy name. And basically, the report said that the headline was up to 1 million plant and animal species, 1 million, face extinction, many within decades, because of human activities our effect on global ecosystems. So that's the headline. So, it's pretty depressing.
It's very, we've talked about this on the radio for the past couple of days since it's come out. But why is this a really major announcement?
Because it is the first time that such a big sort of analysis of I think it says from nearly 15,000 studies. So all of these data from scientific reports. Social science data from indigenous people, traditional agricultural communities, all these sources of data were brought together, and people sat around and distilled them into these findings and this report. So this is the first time such a sort of a comprehensive study like this has been done.
And it's almost like they said too, it's like the kind of first time it was like a planetary check. You know, like just done, sure. They've done like a checkup.
Sure.
On how the planet's going.
Well, not so good.
Not great.
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Actually really, really dire, like you say.
Yeah.
So why do we need to be worried about this?
Well, this is so the rate of extinction of species. And we hear about the headline species. There was the white rhino a few years ago and other sort of big animals. But what we don't hear about are all the smaller animals, the insects and fish species that are just being wiped out. So the extinction rate is already 10 to hundreds of times higher than the average over the last 10 million years. So we're already at a rate that is unprecedented in terms of extinction rate. And we got to ask, so what are we doing to cause this? Yeah, what are we actually doing? And the biggest impact is agriculture. So agriculture activities have the largest impact on the ecosystems, and it's a difficult one to fix because obviously we need agriculture, we need food. Mm-hmm. We're trying to support 7+ billion people on this planet, and we need a way to feed them. But in doing so, we are quickly wiping out a lot of species.
And in terms of those species, like you say, the sort of smaller species, this is going to have a massive effect on the whole ecosystem because of those chains and the relationships and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Pollination too, another thing, right? They talked about the insects, where it's not entirely clear what the situation is, but a conservative estimate was that 10% of them are being wiped out.
Of insect life, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we're basically reshaping our planet. We've talked about this in terms of climate change. You know, we're reshaping the sort of the atmosphere of our planet, and we're also reshaping life on Earth. And they concluded that about 75% of all land and about 2/3, so 66% of the ocean area, have been significantly altered by people. So that's an awful lot, an awful high proportion. Again, driven by production of food. Crop and livestock operations, so crops and livestock, so basically all farming, occupy about 33% of Earth's land surface. So a third of all the land on Earth is crops and livestock. And 75% of its freshwater reserves. So, you know, you see statistics like that, and it's really not surprising that we're pushing the previous inhabitants of these areas out, you know. Agricultural activities are obviously the biggest. They also contribute to greenhouse gases. You know, they account for roughly 25% of total emissions due to fertilizers and the conversion of areas such as tropical forests to grow crops and raise livestock. And so the next biggest threats to nature are the exploitation of plants and animals through harvesting, you know, things like logging, hunting, fishing, things like that. Climate change, pollution, and the spread of invasive species are also, you know, big things that are going on now. It's really sort of depressing, it draws inextricable links between the biodiversity loss and climate change. You know, those two things are strongly linked. If we've talked about temperature raises a couple of months ago, I think, but projected temperature raises, and it's said that an estimated 5% of all species will be threatened temperatures go up by 2 degrees, which is well within the realms of possibility. Up to 16% of the species could be lost if the temperatures go up about 4 degrees C, which, wow, again, is sort of hitting the upper limits, but it's certainly possible.
Okay. Did they have sort of recommendations?
It says we can reverse it, but it would, the quote is, it will require proactive environmental policies, the sustainable production of food and other resources, and a concerted effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm.
And we all know how well that's going.
Mm. There are things happening, though, I suppose, not fast enough and not on the scale that we need.
It's the scale. I mean, this is it. It's always the scale. I mean, there are places where, and countries that are being proactive, but...
Because there's also always that question between the whether it's the policies that will make the change or individual choices, right? That often there's that responsibility on people to make better decisions regarding the environment.
Sure.
But we need both, right? We need actually people to be conscious about this and everything that they do every day.
Yeah.
For example, some of the things in that report they talked about, limited consumption, so actually just not buying as much shit, and limited meat, I think, not eating meat
much. I think that's fair to
say. Those are the two main things, but actually also, right, that all the governments in the world have to kind of commit to this.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell people, don't eat so much. I mean... people need to eat, you know, so how much is to, and don't eat this but do eat that, and because the global climate footprint or the environmental footprint of those two things are different. I mean, I'm a firm believer that really governments have to lead this. I mean, there are, people are concerned and people are trying to do things, absolutely, but this can work so much more efficiently when governments pull together.
Absolutely.
And right now there's major governments who are not.
Okay, shall we move on to next story, which is about dinosaurs?
Yeah, so the next two, I got depressed after reading the first one, so the next two are a little lighter.
But also, I mean, okay, let's not go into the dinosaurs became extinct. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, well, that was a pretty big loss of species too, but that was a different reason.
Different way.
We hope that doesn't happen, because then we really are screwed.
So the relative of the T-Rex, this...
that's right.
Here?
So I thought this was a nice little story, so they've found a relative of T. Rex, of Tyrannosaurus Rex, and they've called it, and I'm probably going to mangle this, but it's Susquehtyrannosaurus hazelae or hazelae, and it's basically a relative, but predated Tyrannosaurus Rex. It would have stood about a meter tall.
Just a meter.
Just
that's
a meter. I know you can
me.
Sort of pat its little head and hope it doesn't bite your hand off, and about 3 meters long, so obviously
okay,
head to tail,
quite
quite long, yeah.
With little arms as well?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It lived a little earlier than T-Rex, so about 92 million years ago, compared with about 80 to 66 million years for T-Rex, so it predated it.
Did it just grow then? Is it actually the ancestor of the...
It's a rare instance where we find a new species. So it's a new species from a poorly known period of history, and they think it's an ancestor of T-Rex.
Okay.
Yeah. But what I found, what was nice is, so it's led by a person at Virginia Tech in the U.S. and who was the lead author on the paper. But she found I shouldn't say she when I'm not sure what the sex is, so I'll just say that person found a number of the bones when she was, when a 16-year-old high school student in 1998, and she was participating in a dig in New Mexico's Zuni Basin, And she found these bones. And this is 1998, so 20 years later, they've figured out what they actually are. So she found them as a high school student, and understanding what they were, what they are, has been a major part of his paleontology
We could
career.
Say
paleontology career.
So this person found the bones and then proceeded to become the person that helped figure it out.
Yeah.
Or
so
be part
so
of it anyway.
So he obviously became a paleontologist and studied these bones and has
that
finally
cool.
figured out what they are. Yeah, and it gives a glimpse into the evolution of Tyrannosaurus, basically before they take over and start chomping everything.
Mm.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if maybe that the little one just kept getting bigger and bigger so that it could survive.
It's it evolved to grow bigger. Yeah, yeah. So
but
there was
also
some
a
evolutionary
good,
advantage
and good insight into career choices and how people make them.
Yes.
Yes. Last story.
Yeah.
Finding ancient mind-altering drugs. Now, I did wonder how these people figured out that they were mind-altering. Did they try the drugs when they found them?
They all sat around the campfire. And no, they didn't.
Okay.
So this is this is a little bit more recent history, but this talks about a find in about 2008 in the Bolivian Andes. Where they found the remains of an ancient burial site. There was stone markers suggesting a body had been there, and they found a small leather bag cinched with a piece of string.
Wow.
And inside was a collection of drug paraphernalia. Now, normally you hear that on the news and you have some idea of what you're talking about, but this was bone spatulas to crush seeds of plants, the plants with psychoactive compounds, wooden tablets with gemstones, to crush, to like a crushing surface, a wooden snuffing tube, so you can essentially inhale.
What?
Yeah, inhale the compounds, and this was carved with a little humanoid figure, and it was the small pouch was stitched together from the snout with stitched together from the snouts of three foxes. So these were fox snouts.
Whoa.
Fox snout pouch.
Fox snout
yes.
pouch.
Have you got your fox snout pouch?
This, now, we could say that these were mind-altering drugs, but they could be, it might just be a medicinal bag.
No, these were mind-altering drugs.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, so they included cocaine.
What?
Yeah, so
wait, so
cocaine.
When are these from?
These are about 1,000 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lit.
So it's cocaine and the primary ingredients in a hallucinogenic tea called ayahuasca. Ayahuasca? Again, I probably mispronounced that. So the content means that it suggests that the users were pretty well versed in how to use these and take these drugs. There's a Kiwi link. The lead author, Melanie Miller, is a bioarchaeologist at the University of Otago in Dunedin. It's well known that nearly every culture has dabbled with some sort of conscious mind-altering drugs, and certainly indigenous groups from Central and South America have used hallucinogens and are well known to have. What Miller did was she helped analyze them. She helped sort of figure out what was there. And so she used radiocarbon dating on the bag to figure out that it was about 1,000 years old.
Wow.
And I've just been talking about this in my chemistry class, liquid chromatography and mass spectrometry, to really just identify what are the compounds,
what are the
materials.
Okay, so they didn't have to try them.
Yeah, no, they didn't have to try them, and it doesn't say that they tried that. But sort of on an anthropological sort of side of this, that it tells you about the trade routes of the people who occupied that area, because these materials or these chemicals were not native to those, and so
right.
It talks about trade routes through South America and Central America. Some of the species grew in lowland Amazonia, so a long way from the high Andes in Bolivia. It's very sort of an interesting little
very
find.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, thank you so much, Marcus.
No problem.
Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.